Yeah. Okay. Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Great.
Excellent. I already know almost all of you, so can I just dispense with our history and get right into it? Okay. Fabulous. I love it. Okay. So I'm going to go till 10:37 because we're starting at 9:37, and an hour is not a lot. So if you need to go to your break earlier, you should just go. Is that all right? And then also for the three of you who don't have my email, it's ari@zingermans.com. So send notes, questions, whatever. If you haven't been to any of our training or been to something that I presented or our other excellent people like Elnine in the back from Zing Train have presented, please, this is the beginning of a dialogue and conversation, not the end. So hopefully I get you thinking about stuff you have not thought about a lot before. In fact, I will tell you that the subject I'm sharing with you this morning is one that I barely thought about in a conscious way organizationally up until 2 or 3 years ago. So it's relatively new for me, and even within our own organization, we've only really begun to do the work around this. So it's a new piece of our puzzle. So just a couple quotes to get you going. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "You can judge a man's wisdom by his hope." You can judge a man's wisdom by his hope. On the downside, Francis Moore LePay, who wrote Diet for a Small Planet, we're in the food business, so I read all the food books too. She said, "Without hope, we human beings die, if not physically, certainly spiritually." Okay, and Peter Kropotkin, who none of you ever heard of other than me quoting him, who was a Russian prince who gave up his noble title to be an anarchist, said, "It is always hope which makes revolution." Okay, this conference, to be clear up front, is like a massive beacon of hope. So totally, I feel confident telling you that this room and this conference is probably one of the most hopeful concentrations of energy in this city right now. And that's not a cut on the city. It's just open book management. You're going to see as I go through this morning is all about building hope. Because when I look at what we've all learned with open book and whatever we've been doing it for 20-something years, what I learned about open book over those two decades and what I've learned about hope in the last couple of years, it totally cross-hatches. So what I'm going to share with you today is not in conflict with anything that you're doing with open book. It's just one more explanation of why it works, and a chance to help you go from what Maggie Bayless, the managing partner of Zing Train, who's a master of training work, would call going from unconscious competence, which means you can make hope grow in your sleep without paying attention, to actually understanding why some of the things y'all are already doing are building hope so that you can do more of it, and so that you can also avoid doing what you don't want to do, which I'm going to bet all of us have done unwittingly, which is crush hope. Okay, are you in? Okay, so those of you who know me already know, you can interrupt at will. You can get up and walk around. I do have two coffees that I went out to get. I could share one of them if somebody's really dying. We'll build it up. So I want to start with a story, which I'm not really proud to tell, but stories can often get you going, and this is really what got me thinking about hope. You might have had a similar story in your organization. So like I said, hope itself is not a new concept. We've all heard the word. We're all mindful of it. But two things happened within about 3 days, just in my sort of passing through the organization, that scared me, shook me up, and got me thinking and turned into this whole project of studying hope. So basically, the story was the same in both scenarios, just different people. So I just happened to be walking, across the dining room at one of our places, and I happened to hear a manager talking to an hourly employee, and I wasn't like listening in, but I was within close proximity, and years of learning to pay attention to everything, mindfulness, I'm happy to hear what they're saying. So basically, in both scenarios, the employee was telling the manager that they wanted to take on something, teach a class, they wanted to take on a new project, they wanted to do some growth thing, and the manager in both cases had a response that scared me, which was sort of like, well, that's not going to happen until you. Now, anybody else done this? Okay. It's not intentional. So it upset me, A, because it was not how we would have liked things to have gone, and B, because it made me realize that it wasn't really the manager's fault. It was ours. And it was ours because we've done training on all sorts of things, as y'all know, including open book, but I never told anybody that their job was to build hope. And we never told anybody that they were supposed to avoid crushing hope. It's kind of obvious. But I don't think that manager got up in the morning and said, I'm going to stamp out hope in at least 6 employees today. That's my critical number. The truth of the matter is that the manager was probably 100% correct about the things that the employee needed to improve. But the problem was the way they said it. And what I later tried to explain it to somebody, I said, here's the difference between what happened in that situation and what I would have liked to happen. What happened in that situation was basically the manager saying, Mark, at the rate you're going to that door, you're never going to get out in time, so I'm going to lock it. And I said, what I want to do is say, Mark, at the rate you're going, you're not going to make it to the door in time. Let's pick up our pace. He's not moving any faster yet, but the difference is if the door's locked, what's the point of even going anywhere? That's no hope. Okay, so clearly, if we crush hope, it doesn't work. If we build hope, it works. So some of you have already read parts of this book or have slept on it under your pillow or looked at it on your shelf hoping that it would just enter your mind because it's so big. I will point out that we publish the pamphlets for those of you who go into a panic zone with large books. This is much lighter than an e-reader. By the way, pamphlets were social media in 1900. If you're interested in history of publication like I am, it's quite interesting because people couldn't afford books, so they would buy little pamphlets for a nickel, and then it would get passed around from person to person, friend to friend, family member to family member, and that was the way that ideas were spread back in 1900. So if you have read the book or if you do read the book, you'll see in there that I sort of created this organic ecosystem model for organizations. And I'm not going to get into the whole thing today, but just for context, I need to explain it. So I started to look at beliefs, which is the main subject of the book, which is not our main subject today, but beliefs, what we believe about human beings, what we believe about ourselves, about business, about leadership, about our products, about the world at large, are the root system of our lives, because it turned out when I studied beliefs that although you can't see them, every action that we take 100% of the time is based on what we believe, even though most of us don't think about it, that's what's going on all day. So beliefs are the root system. I started to look at the organizational culture as the soil. If you try to plant positive beliefs in unhealthy soil, they won't grow. So the sad reality is that the companies that need great game the most have no interest. The ones who are the most creative, who actually need it the least, are the ones who come here. The ones who need it most don't have time and they can't find the money. Somehow y'all figured it out. So the culture is the soil. I started to look at generosity, which is another essay in the book, Spirit of Generosity, as water, moisture, which fit well with pouring water at the roadhouse, which I hadn't thought of. But until then, and then I looked at hope as the sun. What happens if there's no sun? Anybody here garden? What happens? With no sun, will a plant grow? No. Without hope, nothing happens. Okay? Similarly, who's seen plants growing like on the side of a road that are tipped really strongly in one direction? Why is that? They grow towards the sun. So your employees, people in the world at large, will always grow in the direction of hope. Sadly, sometimes hope is given to people with really negative beliefs. So you have leaders who are very negative, but they give people who have been previously hopeless hope that through destruction of something else or someone else, their future will be better, and you will see people follow that because it's the only son available to those people. Is this making any sense? Okay, so I'm going to have you do a little exercise right now. It's called Cantrell's Ladder. It's in your, by the way, we have workbooks today. No PowerPoint. I hope that's okay. So Cantrell's Ladder is named after a guy named Hadley Cantrell, who was one of the early social scientists of the United States. The formal name of this is the Self-Anchoring Striving Scale, but that's very hard for me to say and remember. It's more commonly known as Cantrell's Ladder. I became interested in Hadley Cantrell by reading about this, but I got really interested when I found out that he wrote a book about the psychology of H.G. Wells. What was it called? From Mars? War of the Worlds. So he did a study of the psychology of all the people who fled from War of the Worlds. I'm like, I wish I would have known this guy. But anyway, here's how Cantrell's Ladder works. On a scale of 0 to 10, 0 sucks, 10 is fabulous. How hopeful are you about your life today? Write down a number. And then forecasting, 5 years forecasting, great game. 5 years in the future, put down a number, 0 to 10. How hopeful are you about your life then? And then just to get you talking, I'm going to have you pair up with somebody near you. It doesn't have to be somebody you know. If you want to meet somebody new, go for it. If you want to talk to who you already know, do it. And I'd just like, for a couple minutes, share what your numbers are, if you're willing. And then, because it's a great game, the story behind the number. Okay? You got it? You're going to have to make noise. You can't flunk. Okay. What'd you learn? Anybody learn anything? It's a hopeful group. What else? I agree. What else? Great. What else? Okay. Especially if you're a perfectionist. The beauty is 9 and 10 count about the same. How did it feel talking to somebody else who had really high hope? Very good. How do you imagine it would feel talking to somebody with low hope? Yeah. You're the same person, but who you're around has a drastic influence on your level of hope, okay? So Cantrell's Ladder is a very simple test that was actually used originally around the world to test hope levels in various countries and cultures. So people with low hope do poorly. It's not rocket science. 6 and below is considered low hope. 6, 7, 7, and 8, moderate hope. 9 and 10, high hope. Okay? Sometimes people have low hope today, but they have high hope for the future. It's also possible that you can have high hope today, but through terminal illness in a loved one, some impending form of doom, you can have low hope for the future. Okay? But hope correlates with high levels of everything, and I'll get into that in a second. This is a very simple test you can do. You can actually do it in an interview. Okay, so where do you think hope comes from? Everywhere, okay. Can you be more general? Your family. A lot of it comes from your family. Yeah, so our belief system, if you have positive beliefs in the future, and where would those beliefs come from?
Heart and mind.
Heart and mind, and how did it get in your heart and mind? It's not genetic. Experience? But your values are beliefs. So my point is that you're not born with or without it. It comes from our surroundings and our culture. David Graeber, the anthropologist, said, hopelessness needs to be learned. Children are not born without hope. It's taught to them either through a painful experience or through messages that they get from their parents or the people around us. Our beliefs are the same thing. We're not born with them. They're acquired. Okay? What I've come to realize is that although there are lots of appropriate conversations about advantages and disadvantages in society and the struggles that are placed in front of people who have many of these disadvantages, that the biggest advantage that any of us have, and this room is full of it, is that in a good way, is that without positive beliefs and hope, nothing good will happen. You can overcome, I'm not saying it's a good idea, you can overcome no money, you can overcome racism, you can overcome sexism, you can overcome anti-Semitism, but only if you have hope and positive beliefs. And I'm not saying any of those are good or acceptable, but they are the reality of parts of the world. But my point is, without positive beliefs and hope, the rest don't matter. And if you give money to somebody who has no hope, it just goes by the wayside, okay? So the key, really, of all of this is hope. Great Game works to a great degree, not only, but to a great degree, because it builds hope. There's more to it than that, don't get me wrong. But hope underlies the whole thing, okay? So what are some of the benefits of having hope? A lot of the original work on hope was done by another social psychologist whose name is Rick Snyder. If you're from Michigan, no relation to the governor of the same name, nor I don't think any philosophical relation to the governor of the same name. Here's some stuff that he wrote. Children and adults who scored higher in hope have coped better with injuries, diseases, and physical pain. This is years of study, which I never would have done, but thankfully he did. Scored higher in satisfaction, self-esteem, optimism, meaning in life, and happiness. Performed better in sports, excelled in academics from elementary to graduate school. What is especially compelling about these hope findings for sports and academics is that they have occurred beyond the predictions that are caused by natural abilities. That is to say, hope predicted performances even when the participants' natural talents were statistically adjusted for. Do you understand what he's saying? So if you just took their natural abilities, the higher ability but low hope did worse than lower ability with higher hope. So hope was the factor that determined people's outcomes. So what this is saying is that although you would say, well, it's obvious they're doing well, so of course they're hopeful, but it turns out it's an iterative relationship, which is a fancy word, which means, yes, they have hope because they're doing well, but it's equally true that they're doing well because they had hope in the first place. Okay? In the workplace, more hopeful employees are more likely to engage in and accept organizational change efforts. Higher hope people show less burnout on the job, are more likely to exercise, if you went to the wellness class yesterday afternoon, do not perceive that events in their lives are as disruptive as do lower hope people. Higher hope people are more likely to be called on for leadership. How's that sound? So here's the thing. Quite obviously, we want to create hope, we want to hire people who have hope, and we want to build cultures that encourage hope, because who wants all those things I just said, right? That's what we're trying to create. Great Game, as you'll see, is doing that, but there's other ways and other factors at play. If you get caught up in a downward low hope spiral, it's hard to break. And this is what's happening to people in disadvantaged settings. People have bad work experiences. People are living in neighborhoods where there's no hope. It's not their fault, but they're surrounded by low hope. Basically, thinking about the sun, they're living in darkness. Okay, sometimes we can, I mean, basically what I would say, whatever you want to call it, affirmative action means that you can hire somebody from a low hope background, put them in a positive, sun-filled culture, and help them to overcome past experiences. Okay, but you need to be mindful that you're doing it, because if you treat somebody who has had low hope for 20 years the same as you treat somebody who came from a very high hope, in this context, advantaged background, they're not the same. They're both great people, but they need to be treated differently in the beginning in order to nurture, so they're not blinded by this sudden burst of sun. Is this making any sense? Okay. Let's look at the next page in your workbook, which says six-pointed hope star. So one of the things that Great Game does, and through the three steps, three elements of great finance, and a lot of what we do at Zingerman's is to try to take nice concepts and turn them into very practicable, repeatable, teachable, usable formats that anybody can learn, right? So at Zingerman's, we've got three steps to great service. We've been doing it for 25 years. We got five steps to handling complaints, right? So every company in the country is all for great service. But most of them don't know what it actually means. So to give a pep talk to the new employee, or it's in the staff handbook, or they go like, you want to give good service, right? And everybody goes, of course we do. Just like everybody means to cook a good meal. Like nobody goes, I'm going to cook a bad meal tonight. But they don't know how to cook. So what we want to do is give them simple steps that can be taught to every frontline employee from the minute they begin working. I think that's what takes it from a nice uplifting concept and actually puts it into practice. Okay, so I tried to do the same thing with hope, and because I was thinking about the hope level as sun, I'd made it into a star. My mother would have liked it because it came out as a Jewish star because there were six elements. The odds are, when I tell you these, you yourselves are pretty much doing this stuff all the time anyway. That's why you're effective leaders, and it's why you're here. But again, my goal is to get you out of unconscious competence and make you consciously competent so you understand why what you're doing works and why what some of the people you hire, what they're doing is not working. Okay? So what I'm going to suggest is I'm going to teach you these six things, and I'm going to suggest in the middle column, I'll pause after each one. A lot of you are good at multitasking. Write down an example in the middle column of where you've done it recently, because I guarantee you have. Might have been today. And then in the right column, because we're at Great Game and I want to think about forecasting and looking ahead, write down one place you're going to do it when you get back to work or even later today. Okay? That's my hope. So the middle column could be one you've already done, and the right-hand column could be one you're going to do. I'm just trying to get the practice embedded in your routine. Okay? So none of these are neurosurgery. The first element of the hope star is that people need to see a better future. Duh. Everybody in this room already sees one. That's why you're here. Part of why Great Game works is because you're forecasting, so you're getting people to stop focusing only on what's wrong today and look at the future. So what are some other ways you can help people see a better future? Yeah, the visioning work that we do in hindsight, I'm like, oh, here's one of the really obvious reasons it works. When you describe a positive future, and those of you who's learned the visioning work from us? So what's some of your experiences with the visioning? There you go. He's right here.
Companies move to self-organized structures very fast, so when everybody can see the vision and has buy-in.
Okay. I like it. What else? Eric?
First time I started doing visioning for the future, there were two people in our organization that had just obviously left out.
Okay.
As we started making our changes, they opted to move on.
Okay. And how's the rest of everybody doing? Is that true? Okay. Trust and track, like Bo Burlingham says. Okay, so when people can see a positive future, guess what? Their hope level goes up, and then all those things I described that are positive benefits work. So everybody in this room has something in their head about the future. That's why you're here. But the key is that we're communicating positive futures to the rest of the organization so that the newest employee that you have doesn't just feel like they're only there to do their job. They see whatever your version of the championship, the All-Star Awards, getting to a better tomorrow, okay? If people don't see a future, it doesn't work. Now, this can be done in very small ways. So one of the key little training tips that Maggie from ZingTrain taught us years ago is what she calls LB/NT. We try to do this with every trainee at the end of every training shift. Here's how it goes. Let's say Eric is my trainee, so we sit down for literally 5 minutes. Doesn't have to take long at the end of the shift. And I say, Eric, what did you like best about today's shift? He tells me. Then I tell him what I liked best about the next shift, about today's shift. Then I say, what do you want to do differently next time? So basically, you're getting, so most employees in most jobs go home and they're done. What a relief. But they're not thinking about the future. So by saying, what do you want, what did you like, what do you want to do next time? So what did you like best about today? What do I like best about today? Eric, what will you do next time differently? And then I tell him what I would like him to do next time differently. This is a very simple training technique, LB/NT. So what did he like best about today? What do I like best about today? What's he going to do next time differently? And what do I want him to do next time differently? So we're finishing with a focus on the future. Does this make sense? Simple, simple stuff. Shane Lopez, who's one of the key writers about hope, he had a little technique that he did with his son. He called it nexting. I like good wordplay. So he's always asking his young son, what are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do next? How will we do this next time? So it's just always getting people to think about the future. This is a skill that leaders who are effective do all the time, but I want to think about how we teach it to everybody, not just you. Am I making any sense here? Okay. So I want you to think about a place that you have already helped a frontline employee to think about a better future. And then I want you to think about a frontline employee, or it could be anybody in your family or somebody that you know in your community. It doesn't have to be at work. And think about where you could do it. Today, tomorrow, on email, after this session, whatever you think. Anybody got an example of where they did it in the last few days? Eric.
In our weekly huddles, we talk about our journey to ESAP. So I'm trying to paint.
If you talk louder than the other people can hear.
In our weekly huddles, we talk about the journey to ESAP so that we're painting the future of what ownership's going to be like for them down the road.
Okay, I love it. One other example. Anybody?
I'm going to throw something out about my kid.
Yeah. Yep.
And believe in yourself, so giving them hope that school's going to start well, the year's going to go well.
Great. That's all of what we're talking about. I love it. How about an example of where you're going to do it? Somebody in your organization, your family, your community that could use a little sunlight, could use a little hope. Liz. Okay. Yeah. Easy. What else? You're lowering my hope level. Come on. Eric's going to outdo you. Yeah. 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 I love that. What's your name?
Shannon.
Shannon, thank you very much. Those kind of situations, hi David, even within very difficult, what we would consider sad situations, you can still find hope. It's to die with dignity. It's to be around good people, even in difficult times. Okay. The visioning work that we do, we talk about the vision as the cathedral that we're working to build. And we metaphorically talk about the difference between building a cathedral and just laying stone. Okay, so a better future, whether it's for your mom with Alzheimer's, your kid trying to get through school, building towards the ESOP, these are the cathedrals that you're working to create. It's quite common that the leader has it in their head. But if we leave everybody else to lay stone, we just get more and more frustrated because they're not working at the pace with the passion and intensity that we are. Then we get mad at them. Then they withdraw. Then we work harder to compensate. Then they withdraw. Then we get madder at them. Anybody live that cycle? Yeah, it's not a good one. Larry Lippitt is the son of Ron Lippitt. Ron Lippitt's the guy who did the primary research around what we've turned into our visioning process. And he said, deep within us, each of us has a desire, a hope for a better future. It is engraved deep in our souls. Whether we can articulate it or not, there is a desire for something better, something closer to our preferred future. It is a hope that moves us into the future. So the hope helps people get to where they want to go. Okay? The second one is just sort of what Steve said. It's that they need to see how they're going to actually get to where they're going. Because if they have a better picture of the future, but they got no idea how to get there, it's called magical thinking. Okay, this is the people who are going to win the lottery next week for sure. Bob Wright, who wrote the foreword for the third book, who's in Chicago at the Wright Institute, told me about it. He goes, I got this client. They do like personal coaching. And he goes, I got this client, and he's like 22, but he, or 21, I don't know. He hasn't finished high school yet, and he's trying to get his life together. And so Bob's like, well, what are you going to do? He goes, I'm going to be a doctor. Bob's like, do you understand? You haven't even gotten a high school degree yet. Like, you got to have a path to get from where you are to where you want to go. So if you have a better picture of tomorrow, but no way to get there, it's not that helpful. It's magical thinking. Rick Snyder, the psychologist, calls it way power. Okay? So people seeing a path to get from where they are, like Steve's talking about, to where they want to go, is critical. One of the key indicators of high hope people is that they have more than one path in mind. So people with relatively low hope, when they do have a path to get to the future, it's usually singular. They have one way to get there. And what happens when you only have one way to get there? What's likely to happen? Something goes wrong. Who's had something go wrong in the last week? Right. But see, everybody in this room goes, you do, I don't know, like I swear a lot, but you might not, but then I just get up and I get going. Right? We've all had it. Had an employee I really liked out of the blue and not having said anything for 3 months tell us he's quitting. And how much he hates his job. And it's like, but you haven't said a word. Then yesterday he emailed to say he changed his mind. Well, he said he didn't want to be a quitter and that he realized he was closing his mind to things. And to be honest, a lot of what I think helped is that we responded to it with grace and dignity and respected his concerns instead of telling him he was full of it and he should have done this, that, and the other thing. We just said we felt bad, we let him down, and turned around.
What are you going to do different?
It's a tough one. I mean, I think I talked to the manager, and he's like, I've asked him like 20 times. I think the biggest thing is just what I'm happiest about is the judgment of the manager, who when I emailed him last night and said, what do you think? He said, that he was really surprised, but he said, good people are hard to find. I'm going to try to work with him. I'm meeting with him today at 1 o'clock. Because most managers would say, screw that guy. He screwed me over. I'm not giving him another chance. And he's smart enough and his judgment is good enough. So the biggest thing I want to do is reward and reinforce his good judgment and share that story. Because one of the things I'll get to at the end is sharing stories of hope building is one of the best ways to communicate this message. So I'm almost less concerned about why this guy went off the rails. I kind of know him, and I know that he goes high and low. I shouldn't have been as surprised. But the main message for me is the manager's work around it. That's really the key. So when people have multiple ways to get to a better future, their higher hope. Because when one roadblock appears, which is always going to happen, they just take a deep breath, do what they do, and get on the other path. Y'all have this. But what I want to do is teach it to the frontline employees. A common thing else, so we don't actually, when we have promotions available, we post all our jobs. So we don't go in the back room and go, Deanna's doing good. Yeah, I don't know, Carrie. Okay, let's give it to Deanna. Okay, Deanna, we thought about it a lot. We want to give you this job. We don't do it that way. What we do is we post all the jobs. It's basically open book for job for hiring. So then people need to apply. A good problem that happens to us is too many good people apply. So when I have the conversation early on, before we've even done the interviewing, I'll often talk to the people who have applied to say, we have a really good problem. There's like 8 of y'all that have applied and you're all good. So if this doesn't work out, let's keep working on it. I'm going to get you to the future you want. Okay? Because otherwise, 7 of them are bummed out. They lose hope. What I want them to understand is what you and I already get, which is that there's other ways to get there. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. By the way, interesting thing as I started to study this that I discovered through casual conversation. So it turns out that a very high proportion of our employees applied to work with us more than once before they got hired. Do you have that? It's a funny thing. But in hindsight, it shows me that they're high-hope people. Because low-hope people just give up. They don't like me because, blah, I'm a loser. I'm never going to make it. I'm not cut out for it. The high-hope ones go, well, I don't know, that one didn't work out, but I see they got this other job posted. I'll apply there. So in essence, what's happening in a healthy organization is that we're inadvertently self-selecting for higher-hope people, which is not a bad thing. So take a minute, think about where you've helped in the last week or so, somebody in your organization, a family member, somebody in your community, to see the way to get to the future they want. So think about where you've already done it, because I'm betting you have. And then think about a place you're going to do it when you get back to work or get home or just get on your computer. Anybody got an example of where they already did it in the last week or so? Sir? I love it. This is so big, tiny thing. The guy just took over the kitchen at the Roadhouse who's been there since we opened, but he's never, the managing partner never really took him anywhere. And I'm like, dude, I'm taking this guy to Nashville. We're going to go down. Why? Because I need him to see that there's more going on than just what we do at Zingerman's. Another example. Look at Eric's like the hope star of the world here, dude.
I've had several people come up to me after my presentation once they're starting the game or have just started the game, and I'm showing them how what we've learned applies to their journey now.
Love it. Simple. Show them how what Eric has learned applies to their journey. Who's got an example of something they're going to do? Forecasting. Yes, ma'am. That's okay. I have no bias against Everybody's a leader. What are you going to do?
So, if there's ever negative talk in our organization, I'd really like to explain for ending the negative talk by changing the narrative you want to go.
Yeah, that's great. So, see, you can have positive beliefs about a problem or negative beliefs about a problem. There's a lot more in the beliefs essays about this. But framing it in the positive is so much healthier. One more example of what somebody's going to do. Chris.
So after yesterday, my team was really excited about going for the rookie award.
Okay.
GOV, and so I'm going to help them figure out how we're going to get there.
All right. He's going to help them figure out how we're going to get there. So this is teaching people the tactical steps. It's like buying a gym membership is a good step towards getting in shape, but it doesn't actually do anything other than reduce your bank balance. You have to actually go.
A little confession along with that. When they told me last night, I tried to temper their enthusiasm a little bit because I said, man, maybe not this year, but the year after that. And so
right.
The class is like,
right.
Well,
or you let me spin it more positively. You're helping them to have multiple paths. See, because if they're only, I'm not joking. If their only thing is they're going to win next year, it's not really that likely. I mean, if you're playing baseball and your goal is to be rookie of the year, I mean, that's a lot of stuff going on. If your goal is to have a great career, it's a lot more likely to happen. You may be rookie of the year, but the key is not just 1 year, it's to build a career. So in that sense, you might have given them more multiple paths to get to the greatness. So nice job.
Yeah, it was a goal on our scoreboard, so I recommend it.
Well, and here's me. I'm like, we're doing it. So
well, they're all good. He's not fighting you.
No, but
that's healthy diversity. Right. Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to figure out, without taking out hope, how to continue to say the discipline is going to be important.
What's next? Mm-hmm. That's the question.
Yeah,
2 years from now, where are you going to... Yeah, I mean, pick your metaphor, whatever.
Right.
They're a rookie. They got called up to the big leagues. I don't even like baseball anymore, but I'm just thinking about it. They come up in their first game, they go 3-for-4. Woohoo! Bummer, there's like 360 more games this year. All you had is one good game. So it's not to cut them down. It's just 3 years. Yeah, don't get all full of yourself, man.
Yeah.
I had one good game, and then the rest of my 3 years sucked. It's just, this is fabulous, man. You're building towards a positive future. Where are we going? And if I had more time and I was teaching you visioning, I'd say, why don't you sit down and write a vision for yourself for a year out so I can help you get there. Okay? The third thing is, you could see on the page, is to show people how much they matter as individuals. This is not tied to their work. The industrial model, by the way, is all about dehumanization. Enslavement was about dehumanization. My work, our work, is about humanization. This is how much people matter as a human being. Even if they do bad work, I still care about them, and they still matter. So how would you do that? You would do it by honoring who they are. Here's a really simple one, especially in bigger companies. Know their name. People are like, I'm not good with names. I'm like, I just taught you the belief cycle. It's self-fulfilling. If you keep repeating that you're bad with names, you don't need to have a PhD to figure out you're going to be bad with names. They're like, how do you remember everybody's name? I work at it. I'm like, dude, you tell them they have to learn 200 cheeses. You can't remember their name? Know something about their life. Where did they come from? How did they get here? Whatever. Do they have a kid? Do they have a mom with Alzheimer's? You don't have to spend an hour talking about it, but just the casual question to Shannon, how's your mom doing? It takes 60 seconds. But it shows them that you're paying attention and that they matter as a human being. Okay? So take a second, write down where you've already done that in the last week or so. I'm focusing on recent because I'm not looking for like in 1973 you gave a compliment. So in the last week or so, where have you done this? I'm trying to help you become consciously competent. And then going back to work or back home, where will you do it? So remember, this is unrelated to the actual work they do. So if it's your kid, by the way, this is not tied to their grades. Okay, the fourth one, as you're doing that, the fourth one is the other side. Show them how much the work they do matters. It's very easy. Almost every job, when it comes down to it, is repetitive work, if that's how you choose to view it. So being a professional athlete is mostly just game film, practice, workout, sleep in strange hotels, and eat in places you might never eat in again. Being a great musician is mostly rehearse, 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 rehearse. But the point is to understand what happens from the work. So most people in most food service jobs in our industry, it's just like whatever, scoop some more ice cream, slice another case of tomatoes, slice another case of onions. What I want them to understand is in our work is you're helping local growers, you're restoring the ecosystem agriculturally. Through the quality of service that we're giving, I was just saying to somebody last night at the event at Scardello, you know, literally, man, I mean, we have people coming to Ann Arbor from 4, 5, 6, 8 hours away to bring their kid to the healthcare centers. And like to get a 2-year-old in the cardiac unit getting surgery that like only 4 places in the country can do, you can imagine how anxious they are. And the quality of service that we give them has an enormous impact on what's happening in their life, right? So it's not just laying stone. You're making something amazing happen, and I want people to see that it's not just, did you get the lid on the coffee right? Did you lock the door properly? Did you follow the checklist? But what happens because of it? This is purpose. This is the why behind it, whatever. So take a minute, think about where you've helped somebody see how their work makes a difference in the world in the last week or so, and then think about where you're going to help somebody see it going forward. Anybody got an example of where they've done it? Yes, sir.
Our business is fixing over-the-road trucks.
Yep.
Can you all hear?
Okay.
Not too long ago, and they had to wait until their truck was finished. And they had 2 little dogs with them, and they didn't have enough money to pay for the hotel. And so I took the technician who was working on the truck, and I brought him in and introduced him to these people. I let them say hi to him and describe their situation to the technician. And once the technician knew these people were waiting on their vehicle and they didn't have money to stay in the hotel,
yeah, it's huge. So when you share these stories, by the way, with new employees, what's the message? Yeah, you matter. So helping people see how much their tiny, seemingly tiny things make an enormous difference. And it's also, by the way, in open book management, is from a sales standpoint. Like, I want everybody to understand in our company, like every cappuccino order you take, you don't know, man, it could be the corporate gift buyer for Google. This kind of stuff happens, right? It's the little things that make the difference. So please help them understand it's not just a cup of coffee. It's not just another water pump. It could be huge, okay? The fifth thing is to help them see what you all already know, which is that success is built on small steps. Anybody in financial planning here? A couple of you. So the main message, like most of the public thinks they're going to one day be rich, that's called magical thinking. They have the first part point, but they're missing the second point. Everybody in financial planning tells you the same thing. I'm not a financial planner, but they all say, if you put aside $4 a week for the next 20 years, you'll be rich. Because it's true. Wealth is not created in one magical grand slam or magical stroke. It's created in small steps. Okay? So I want people to understand that you don't build a great company with brilliant ideas. Like, I like brilliant ideas, but you build it by going out every day and doing it. In our world, it's like tasting the salt, checking the product, going back to the table one more time, the brightness and energy with which you answer the phone, the way you handle a small complaint could turn into a lifetime customer, right? So I want them to understand that these tiny things make an enormous difference. So write down for yourself someplace that you've shown somebody how these small steps make a difference. Big ones are great, but it's the little things that make it work. And then one place where you're going to point out to somebody where their little steps that they've taken that seem insignificant actually made a difference. So I like to compliment the latte art on their coffee, how good the shot of espresso was, the energy that they bring when they're walking through the dining room. But like, see, for the leader to note the energy that a 17-year-old hostess in her first month is bringing to the dining room builds hope. Because most places, nobody notices. Is this making any sense? Okay, the last one, again, great game is doing this in spades, is to create a sense of belonging to something bigger than yourself. The whole point of great game is to understand that you're not just fixing water pumps, making cappuccinos, or making sandwiches. You're part of a bigger entity, and each sandwich we make contributes to the positive whole. Now, please understand there's a natural tension between being part of a group and showing them that they matter as an individual. So, like, fascist mass movements are great at the bottom one, but the individual is completely ignored. They don't matter. I want both. If the individual matters for everything, that's Ayn Rand, then there's no whole. There's no community. I want a community that honors the individual within it. The vision is one way of doing it. Great game is another way of doing it. But helping people to understand that when something goes wrong, you're not alone. This is what your repair guy did for that family. To help them understand, even though they were away from home, they were still in a caring community. Okay? Is this helpful at all? Okay, so 2 points, and then I'll move to the next page, and then we'll wrap up and get you out of here. So, point number one, I realized as I was doing this work, there is no reason in the world that you and I cannot do this for everybody we work with pretty much directly every day. This is like 5 minutes of work. It's a quick email. It's a text. It's a casual comment in passing. This isn't like a project where you sit for a week agonizing and then come up with a big strategy. It's just like, Russell, man, when you sent me that email last year, it really brightened my day. Which is true. It's small stuff. So what I started to realize is, like, for your direct reports and quotes, there's no reason you can't do this every single day. For your kid, there's no reason you can't do this every day. And I've suggested to some of our managers, they just make a grid. I'm not great on Excel, but you could make one on there. Somebody's probably going to have an app for it by the end of the week. And just keep track. Write down the names of the 5-6 people you work with every day. Did you do each of these things? It's not rocket science. And by the way, who here has felt kind of low and down in their life? You can do it for yourself. If you're good at self-management and you feel yourself sinking, I'm giving you right here 6 steps. If you do these regularly, the sun will grow. Guaranteed. You just take the initiative. You all are leaders anyway. Take the initiative to go out and make it happen. Okay? The last page, and we'll move towards wrapping up. So, windows of hope. This is something that I became conscious of through the comments of an employee, Amos Arinda, who worked at the Roadhouse for a long time, has started as a busboy. Now he's a manager at our Korean restaurant. He said about moments of hope, it's a brief window. You take an interest in somebody that you believe has potential but may not yet have the tools to perform at a higher level. By showing interest in them, you actually help give them the tools, i.e. the hope, that they need to grow. In truth, they might have already had those tools, but just didn't realize it. My moment of hope was when I was busing at the Roadhouse and one of the managers came up to me and asked me if I wanted to start training to be a server. It truly made me think that maybe this job was something more than what it had seemed. And then the second moment was when I got asked if I wanted to be part of the work group. This is when he was a busboy for Zingerman's 2020 vision. So those of you who know the visioning process understand this. I was just a busboy, and I was getting asked to participate in the rollout of the long-term vision of this organization. I was like, wow. It really got me interested. That's basically what changed my trajectory here. So this is like you take hold emotionally, intellectually, of somebody in your organization that might be ignored, a secretary, a truck driver, somebody who's in their first month, and you show them that you care and that something great could happen, because most of them take a frontline job to get a job because it's better than no job, and it was better than McDonald's. But you could show them a window. Now, the key is, if you help them through that window, don't let it slam on their head. So if you get them pumped and then you forget about them, it's almost worse because they got a big bump on their head and they're just bummed out, and you've actually lowered their hope because one time they let it go up and now you didn't follow through. So please be careful. It's a gentle process. But these windows of hope are all around us. I believe everybody's capable of greatness. Gary Snyder, the poet, talks about the image of melon growers, sages in the mountains growing melons. Sages in the mountains growing melons. From afar, they look like peasant farmers, but they're actually sages. And I think that we are surrounded by sages that look like melon growers. Everybody in your company is capable of brilliance. Our job is to help get it out of them. And hope is one of the best ways. What are some things not to do? Real quickly, y'all know this, but I don't know about you. I've done all of them. Ignore people. Who's done that? Let's just tell, okay, don't dump your anxiety on everybody around you. Like, we're in leadership. We have a lot of anxiety. It's understandable. But walking around going, oh, my God, I don't know if we can do this. Oh, man. What's your problem, Dave? Shape up. It's called acting out. He's like, what did I do wrong? Did you save your $4 this week? It's like, if you dump your anxiety, you're quashing their hope. Don't dismiss people's ideas out of hand. Because they're projecting their hope, and we're blocking out the sun. Please don't do the mood swing thing. One day you're happy, the next day you're miserable. People don't know what to expect. They just shut down. It's like a turtle. You know what they do when they're under threat? They just pull in, man. And that's what your employees are going to do. And please, cynicism and sarcasm seem funny in the moment to many of us, including me, but they don't build hope. It's a stress reliever, but it's diminishing hope. Because the cynicism is what's, we laugh and we feel better for 5 minutes. But what they keep with that, what stays with everybody else, is the cynicism. And cynicism is a negative belief in the future. So do it at home by yourself, but not in your culture. What are some things to consider doing? Real quickly, and then we'll wrap it up. Teaching hope. If you teach what I'm teaching you to your crew, they'll do better. This is a very simple format. Everybody can do this. Every 8-year-old can do this. It's not that hard. Actively and consistently provide hope by recognizing the little things. You can do it when you leave here by texting one of your employees or your significant other, whatever. Ask questions that cultivate hope. What do you hope for in the future? Very simple question, but meaningful if you go ask a new frontline employee. What's the best compliment you've gotten lately? This tells you how they like to have their hope built. What helps you feel like you matter? See, I'm an introvert. Inviting me to a party does not make me feel like I matter. It makes me nervous. One of our best employees said, just FYI, you know, I'm getting married next month. I'm going to send you an invitation, but I know you're not going to come, and that's fine. Watch for moments of hope and celebrate them when you can. So you can even put this on the huddle. There's a program called City Years in Chicago that starts every meeting with what they call ripples of hope. So when they do the intros, everybody shares some hope-building experience that they've had. Why? Because if you got 20 people in there and they all share for 1 minute something positive, you're building hope in the group. Okay? Am I making sense here? Is this helpful? Do you feel a little more hopeful than you already were because you were pretty hopeful when you got here?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm out of time, so I'm going to wrap, but I'll stay after for a few questions. You have my email. It's ari@zingermans.com. There's way more in the books. There's a very nice story about Sean Eskenazi, who's from Springfield, Missouri, who's open book, and more importantly to me, makes incredible chocolate, and more importantly than that, is doing unbelievable work with the growers in Tanzania. So check that out. Last quote is from a woman you never heard of, because I like obscure anarchists. Her name is Peggy Corniger, comes from Western Illinois originally. She said, "I do believe that what we all need, what we absolutely require in order to continue struggling, is hope. That is a vision of the future so beautiful and so powerful that it pulls us steadily forward. If we abandon hope, then we have already lost." So thank you all for being a beacon of hope out in the world. Have a great rest of the conference. Come to Ann Arbor and visit us. And Elnian, put a what's up on the screen?
Yeah.
It's a landing page?
Yeah.
I don't actually know what that means, but it's a landing page that you can go to and probably get stuff. Thank you, everybody.